ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। रीडिङ्ग् फ्रम् श्रीमद् भागवतम् केण्टो 10 चाप्टर् 27। दिस् चाप्टर् इस् एण्टैटल्ड् इन्द्र अण्ड् सुरभि आफर् प्रेयर्स्। टेक्स्ट् नम्बर् 26। नानारसौगा सरितो वृक्षा आसन् मधुस्रवा अकृष्टपच्यौषधयो गिरयो बिभ्रमुन्मणि नानारसौगा सरितो वृक्षा आसन् मधुस्रवा अकृष्टपच्यौषधयो गिरयो बिभ्रमुन्मणि नानारसौगा सरितो वृक्षा आसन् मधुस्रवा अकृष्टपच्यौषधयो गिरयो बिभ्रमुन्मणि अकृष्टपच्यौषधयो बिभ्रमुन्मणि नानारसौगा सरितो वृक्षा आसन् मधुस्रवा अकृष्टपच्यौषधयो गिरयो बिभ्रमुन्मणि। Word to word translation, nana, various, rasa, liquids, oga, flooding, saritaha, the rivers, vriksha, the trees, asan, became, madhu, with sweet sap, srava, flowing, akrishta, even without cultivation, pachya, ripened, oshadaya, the plants, girayaha, the mountains, abibran, carried, ut, above the ground, manin, jewels. Translation: rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids, trees exuded honey, edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. Since there is no purport, we'll go to the next verse also. Krishne abhishikta yetani sarvani kurunandana nirvairani abhavamstata krurani apinisargataha. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. O Parikshit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. Purport: those corrupted by a type of sophisticated cynicism may mock these descriptions of a paradisical world situation affected simply by worshipping the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, modern man has created a hell on earth in his cynical rejection of heaven on earth, which is actually possible through Krishna consciousness. The situation described here, created simply by the auspicious bathing ceremony of the Lord, is an authentic historic incident. Since history repeats itself, there is hope that the Krishna consciousness movement may again bring the world community to the brilliant reality of self-realized existence. So, we have to read the next verse also. Next verse is the last verse of this chapter.
Iti gogo kulapatim govindam abhishichyasa anugyato yayau shakro vrito devadi birdivam.
After he had ceremonially bathed Lord Govinda, who is the master of the cows and the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission and, surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, returned to his heavenly abode. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada in the 10th canto, 27th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Indra and Mother Surabhi Offer Prayers.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashati Deshatarine. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Kadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So today we are reading from the 10th canto. We are reading the concluding verses of this particular pastime of Govardhan Leela. This pastime almost, it was described in four chapters, starting from the 24th chapter till the end of the 27th chapter. And one devotee was commenting that, like, almost the last 3 months, like, so many devotees, they gave so many different perspectives of the pastime that maybe we should make a booklet which contains like wealth of the realizations of devotees. So today we are reading the concluding verses of this chapter. So here what is being described is that when Lord Krishna was bathed by Indra and Surabhi and other demigods, the effect of when the Abhishek ceremony of Lord Krishna was performed, how the all the living entities in Vrindavan, they were enlivened. The trees actually exuded honey. And the rivers, like lot of tasty liquids started flowing. And the mountains, they actually produced valuable jewels which were previously hidden in their interiors. And then many cruel living entities, which are cruel by nature, they gave up their natural enmity and they became friendly with other living entities. And after performing this Abhishek ceremony, Indra and other demigods, they actually returned to their heavenly abodes. So, actually different things were emphasized in this particular pastime. So today we will try to see few of the lessons connected to this pastime, as well connected to this particular incident which we are reading. So one thing I was thinking was, we see in the 10th canto, so many different pastimes of Krishna are described. And in all these pastimes, different pastimes, they establish actually Krishna's superiority over other demigods. Like for example, like in this Govardhan Puja, Krishna's superiority over Indra was established. Previously, Krishna's superiority over Lord Brahma, Krishna's superiority over Varuna, the superiority of Krishna over Lord Shiva, Ganesh, like in the fight between Krishna and Banasur. So Banasur was assisted by Krishna, Banasur was assisted by Lord Shiva and his sons Kartikeya, Ganesh. So Krishna was on the opposite side. Ultimately Krishna won the battle. So we see all these pastimes, they establish Krishna's superiority over the different controllers in this universe. So many times we see that people, they worship some particular demigod or somebody powerful in this world, and not knowing that that person is actually receiving the power from the Supreme Personality of God. Just like, suppose when you are going in a long distance train, and especially when you travel in a second class compartment, and many times in the Indian trains, like sometimes beggars come, and they come, may not be in the first class compartment, in the second class compartment beggars come, and then they clean the floor, and after cleaning the floor they ask for some some money or something from the passengers who are sitting. So sometimes it so happens that, so you know that there is like a upper berth and lower berth. Suppose if the beggar is a blind, sometimes many blind people also come. So blind person, he just cleans and then he is asking for some money. So a person in the lower berth, sometimes he may not give money, but somebody, suppose if a person in the upper berth, he takes pity and then he gives some money. So he passes that money to the person in the lower berth, and the person in the lower berth, he actually gives the money to the blind person. So the blind person, after receiving the money, he actually thanks this person in the lower berth profusely and then he goes back. But actually, it was given by the person from the upper berth who actually gave it to the person in the lower berth. So similarly, when we are when we are not aware of the supreme position of Krishna, when we are blinded, when we are not aware of the powers of Krishna, then we actually worship some person in this world, not knowing that that person is actually receiving his power and opulence from the Supreme Lord. It could be we are worshipping some Krishna, we could be worshipping some demigod, or we could be worshipping some sports star or some film star or some ordinary, some gunda or some politician or something like that. But they all actually get the powers from Krishna. So basically, worship is meant for Krishna, but respect is meant for everyone. So if we just extend the same analogy, suppose if a blind beggar, he does not know the person in the upper berth has given the money. So he actually worships the person in the lower berth. So suppose a beggar with eyes, he actually gets the money from the lower birth, but he sees that the person in the upper birth only passed the money to the person in the lower birth, and then he gave the money. So that person, so he may have two responses. One response is that he just profusely thanks the person in the upper birth who actually gave the money, and completely neglects the person in the lower birth, and then he just goes again. So similarly, sometimes, like this refers to sometimes immature devotees, they worship Krishna, but they disrespect the other demigods. They disrespect the other demigods or other powerful personalities who are actually acting as representatives of the Lord. So the ideal behavior is, we actually worship the beggar should worship the person in the upper birth, and also respect the person in the lower birth for passing that money to him. So similarly, one should worship Krishna, but and also respect the demigods. So here we see that in this particular pastime, Krishna's superiority over Indra is established. And another thing which I want to discuss is that here Krishna is actually coronated as Indra. Krishna is coronated as a real Indra by Surabhi and Lord Indra himself. And then we see that how all the living entities, they reciprocated, they were so happy, and they actually voluntarily produced all their natural opulences. Even the cruel living entities, they actually they became freed from their enmity towards each other. So here we see that when there is actually a good leader, then the citizens, they naturally, voluntarily want to pay their taxes to the government. So when there is no proper leader, then people want to do some mismanagement, because they know that even if you pay taxes, the government is not going to utilize the money properly. So similar, we see that just like here Krishna was coronated as Indra, there are other descriptions where other personalities are coronated as the king. How similar description follows, like for example, in the fifth canto, there is a description of the dynasty of Priyavrat Maharaj. So in that dynasty, Shukadeva Goswami describes a king called as Maharaj Gaya. So it is described that when Maharaj Gaya, when he was coronated by the blessings of the daughters of Daksha, all the chaste and honest daughters of Maharaj Daksha, whose blessings were always effective, bathed Maharaj Gaya with sanctified water. In fact, it is described that Maharaj Gaya was such a great king that when he was coronated, when he was appointed as the king, that Mother Earth, being attracted by the wonderful qualities of Maharaj Gaya, Mother Earth produced all the necessities profusely. So just like here Krishna was coronated as the Indra, like Earth produced all the necessities, similarly there also, even when a representative, when a true representative of the Lord, who is a devotee of the Lord, when he is coronated as the king, Earth was actually giving all necessities profusely. It was described just like suppose when you have to milk a cow, the natural process of milking a cow is to bring a calf, and when the cow sees the calf being showing its affection, because of its affection towards the calf, actually cow actually gives milk, and then the calf drinks some milk, and the remaining milk is actually taken by the human beings. So similarly, it describes that the wonderful qualities of Maharaj Gaya were compared to the calf, and Mother Earth is compared to the cow. And the cow, Mother Earth, being attracted by the qualities of Maharaj Gaya, she produced all the necessities profusely. So in this way, but Maharaj Gaya, he was actually self-satisfied. He did not need all the necessities. He just shared all these necessities with all the human beings, with all the citizens. Just like cow, calf needs only little bit of milk. and the remaining milk is actually meant for others, human beings. So Maharaj Gaya just took, he was self-satisfied. He just shared all the necessities which Mother Earth produced to all his citizens. On the other hand, the unnatural process of milking a cow is that you actually forcefully, you don't bring the calf in front of the milk, in front of the cow. You actually forcefully milk the cow by using some machines. And so they try to like squeeze and they try to actually torture the cow. So by that, they might try to extract a lot of milk, but only for a short time. In fact, that milk does not represent the affection of the cow. So here we there is another instance in the 7th canto, when Hiranyakashipu became the king, when he performed his austerities and then he got power from Lord Brahma, he conquered all the universe and then he occupied the throne of Indra. When he occupied the throne of Indra, a similar description comes. It describes that as if in fear of Hiranyakashipu, the planet Earth, which consists of 7 islands, delivered food grains without being plowed. The same description is there in today's verse. Thus it resembled cows like the Surabhi of the spiritual world or the Kamaduga of heaven. The Earth yielded sufficient food grains, the cows supplied abundant milk, and the rivers produced very tasty liquids, and the ocean supplied various kinds of gems and jewels for Hiranyakashipu's use. And these oceans were the oceans of salt water, sugarcane juice, wine, clarified butter, etc. So here we see that even in the case of Hiranyakashipu, when Hiranyakashipu became the king, the earth produced all the necessities. But it was not out of affection for Hiranyakashipu, because out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. So he actually forcefully extracted. So when there is a force, actually it does not last for long. So definitely after some time Hiranyakashipu was killed by Narasingadev. So we see that the principle we learn is that when the leader is trustworthy, then the subordinates, they actually naturally, they voluntarily want to come and offer everything. So talking about leadership, there is I just want to talk about one more verse. We'll see that verse in relation to today's pastime in this Govardhan Leela. That there is a verse in the 4th canto in which Maitreya Rishi describes the story of King Vena. So this King Vena, he was he was appointed by the Brahmanas as the king after the death of his father, King Anga. But this King Vena, he turned out to be such a cruel king that after he became the king, he stopped all the sacrifices. He stopped all the performance of yajna. He stopped all the religious rituals. So he was such a cruel king. So that time, the Brahmanas thought, we thought that, if there is a king, the thieves and rogues would get subdued. So because of that, we appointed King Vena as the king. So definitely, after Vena was appointed as the king, the influence of the kings and rogues and thieves, that got subdued. But he became the greatest rogue, that he actually stopped the performance of all the yajna. So then they wanted to go and advise. They go to actually advise King Vena how it is important to perform sacrifices and yajna. So they speak in one of their instructions. They speak a verse which is very relevant even in the today's political scenario. So there, the Brahmanas, they say, the duty of a king, the king should not only give protection to the citizens from the rogues and thieves, but the king should also give protection to the citizens from his own ministers who have become the rogues and thieves. So, in fact, Prabhupada in that purport he mentions at least 3 or 4 times, he highlights this point, how the duty of a king, the king not only has to protect the citizens from the external forces, rogues and thieves, but sometimes people from in their own ministry, they may become the rogues and thieves. So, one has to give protection even from them. So, if we see, in fact, if we see this verse from the point of your current political scenario, just few months back, the government actually passed a bill in order to protect the corrupt ministers to continue to so that they can continue to be in their post, although the criminal cases were going on. So they were like, what to speak of protecting the citizens from the corrupt ministers? They were trying to protect the corrupt ministers from the law by passing a law which will actually allow them to be in their post while the criminal cases are going on. So who would actually support such a government if he is a true follower of Srimad Bhagavatam? So we see that in the case of, if we see this particular verse from the Govardhan Leela pastime, Krishna protected the Vrajavasis not only from the external demons like Kamsa and the demon sent by Kamsa. Krishna also protected the Vrajavasis from the ministers in his own universal government who became little demoniac for some time. Like, he protected the Vrajavasis from Indra who became demoniac, at least for some time. So in this way we see that Krishna protected the Vrajavasis from both these kinds of demons. And Krishna also protected Indra internally from the anartha of pride. So in this way we see that Krishna offers like a thorough protection to all the people. So sometimes like Krishna, like this shows actually Krishna's compassionate nature. Like sometimes, like when we are preaching, sometimes we may show, like suppose sometimes like devotees, like we may be compassionate towards the animals, sometimes we may behave harshly towards other human beings. Like for example, in the story of Narada Muni preaching to Prachina Parishad, Narada Muni, he was compassionate towards the animals who were being killed by Prachina Parishad, and he was also compassionate towards Prachina Parishad. So he protected the animals externally from getting killed by Prachina Parishad, and he also protected Prachina Parishad internally from his attachment to Karmakanda rituals. In this way we see that Krishna offered external protection to the Vrajavasis, because in their case there is no need of internal protection, they were all pure devotees. So Krishna offered external protection to the Vrajavasis, both from the demons like Kamsa and also demons from his own government. And Krishna also offered protection to Indra from the internal enemies like pride. So this is another point. And another thing we can see in this character of if we see the character of Indra, if we see from the beginning of 10th canto, the 10th canto begins with all the demigods, in fact Mother Earth approaching Lord Brahma when the earth was overburdened by the demoniac kings. And then the Lord Brahma goes along with the other demigods to the shore of the milk ocean, and he offers prayers to the Supreme Lord. So we see that at that time Lord Indra was also there. Indra was also there, Shiva was there. So everyone went to actually offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. And the Lord told, very soon I am going to appear in my original form and all of you should assist me in the pastimes. So that time we see Indra was he was actually accepted the Supreme Lord as his servant. He was actually he was in a normal position, in the sense that he accepted a subordinate position toward the Supreme Lord. And then when Krishna took birth, when he was in the womb of Devaki, then all the demigods, they came to the prison cell of Kamsa and they offered beautiful prayers to Krishna who was in the womb of Devaki. So that time also Indra was accepted a subordinate position to Krishna. But now when Krishna performed this pastime of Govardhan, maybe Krishna must be 7 or 8 years old. So if we see from the point of view of universal time span, in the case of demigods, one day of the demigods is equivalent to 6 months. So something like, just 3 or 4 days back, Indra was submissive to Krishna. He offered prayers to Krishna when he was in the womb before his appearance. After 3 or 4 days, suddenly he exhibited such a behavior, just like completely inconsistent with what was his behavior 3 days back. And so now Krishna completely subdued his pride. And then he was thoroughly humbled and he is offering abhishek to Krishna. And then later we will see the 10th canto when Krishna goes with Satyabhama. This pastime has narrated by many devotees. So Krishna brought the earrings of Aditi and handed over to Aditi. Personally he went to heavens and handed over. And then Indra was like offering obeisances to Krishna. And he was like completely in a humble state of mind. And when Krishna took the Pariyatha tree, again Indra actually fought with Krishna. So that was just, if we see from the point of view of demigod's lifespan, so now Krishna is maybe 7 or 8 years old. Maybe at that time when Krishna performed his pastime, I don't know the exact age, it must be 70 or 80 years, something like that. But if we see from the demigod's lifespan, it is just after a few days. So, but again there is a thorough inconsistent behavior. So this is the nature of a karma mishra bhakta. There is an inconsistency in such a short span of time. So that is because of maintaining the material disease. Like on the other hand, if we see in the case of pure devotees, how they exhibit consistent behavior. Like if we examine the character of Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, when he was there in the womb of his mother, Kayadu, that time Narada Muni actually instructed him. And Kayadu was about to be killed. Demigods came to attack Kayadu. That time Hiranyakashipu was performing austerities and Narada Muni protected Kayadu. And then Narada Muni gave spiritual instructions. And Prahlad Maharaj was there in the womb of Kayadu for such a long time. Because Kayadu asked a benediction from Narada Muni that, please give me a benediction that so that I may deliver the child after my husband returns from the austerities. So Prahlad Maharaj received the instruction when he was there in the womb. And then he came out of the womb after a long time. And then after he came out of the womb, he did not forget the instructions of Narada Muni. And he gave instructions to his classmates. And he even preached to his father Hiranyakashipu. And then when ultimately Narasingadeva appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu, and Narasingadeva was so angry, and all the demigods were so afraid to actually approach Narasingadeva. They could not actually, they offered prayers, but they could not pacify the anger of Narasingadeva. And they finally told Prahlad Maharaj, you go and pacify Narasingadeva. And when he was chosen among all the people, so usually one can easily become proud. But then Prahlad Maharaj, he begins his praise by saying, Brahma dayo suragana munayota siddha sattvaika tana gatayo vachasam pravahai. So he says like, even Lord Brahma and other demigods who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, if they could not pacify you, how can I, who am born in the family of demons, how can I offer prayers to pacify you? He was completely humble. And after offering prayers, when he could actually pacify Narasingadeva, even after that also he did not become proud. Then Narsingdev appoints Prahlad Maharaj as the king. And then Narsingdev actually takes leave. So at that time, Prahlad Maharaj, he offers obeisances to all the demigods. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, everyone present. Like he did not feel that, oh, I was the only person who could pacify. Oh, all these personalities could not pacify. So he, even then he did not become proud. And later when he became the king, so there is a chapter in the 7th canto, 13th chapter, when Narada Muni is giving instruction to Yudhishthira Maharaj, he tells that how Prahlad Maharaj, when he was a king, he was actually searching after sadhus in his kingdom. So he meets Avadhut Brahmana, and then he understands his spiritual position, and then he actually hears from the Avadhut Brahmana. So Prahlad Maharaj approaches him that, please actually give me spiritual instructions for my purification. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj was telling in a class that Prahlad Maharaj felt that, Prahlad Maharaj felt, I need to hear from others to not to get purified. So Prahlad Maharaj, when he became the king, even at that time, even after such a long time, in fact Prahlad Maharaj became the king for one manvantara. For one manvantara he was the king. Even then he did not become proud. And then later, when Prahlad Maharaj became the king and he retired from the kingdom, and his son became the king, and then later his grandson became the king, Bali Maharaj, he became the king. And when Bali Maharaj, in the pastime of Bali Maharaj, that at the end of this pastime, when Vamanade tests Bali Maharaj, and then finally Vamanade gives blessings to Bali Maharaj, saying that I'll give you the Sutala planet, and this is more opulent than the Indra Loka, and I will personally give you my association to you, and I will personally protect you as the doorkeeper. So then, when Vamanadeva is about to leave, that time Prahlad Maharaj, he speaks few verses. That time Prahlad Maharaj says, Nemam virinchi labate prasada na shrir na sharvakimuta parenye yanno suresham asidurgapalo vishvabhivandyair abhivanditangri. He says that we have attained mercy that Brahma, Lakshmi or Shiva, what to speak of others, have not attained. You, whose lotus feet are worshipped by the most respectable person in the universe, are the protector of us, demon, in all respects. The next verse is like even more wonderful. And Prahlad Maharaj says the next verse, he said, O supreme shelter of everyone, great personalities like Brahma enjoy their perfection by tasting the honey of rendering service at your lotus feet. But as for us, who are all rogues and debauchees born of an envious family of demons, how have we received your mercy? It has been possible only because your mercy is causeless. So we see the consistent, the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. The first prayer when he offered to Narsingadev, there he is thinking that, oh, I am just, how can I offer prayers who am born in the family of demons? So now, when he was actually such an old man, when Vamanadeva has given mercy to Bali Maharaj, that time also he is having the same, speaking the same thing, that how can we, who are all rogues and debauchees born of an envious family of demons, how have we received your mercy? It is because, only because your mercy is causeless. So here we see that Indra, who is a Karma Mishra Bhakta, who is exhibiting inconsistent behavior in such a short span of time, after a few days. But on the other hand, we see Prahlad Maharaj, who is exhibiting consistent behavior for a period of one manvantara. So this is the difference between a Karma Mishra Bhakta and a pure devotee. So the reason for such inconsistency is that because a person maintains material desires. A person maintains material desires. So like one has to, like unless a person like thoroughly removes the material desires, or unless a person thoroughly removes the false ego, it will actually again grow back. Like for example, it is said like false ego is like a liver. Like liver, when you actually, when a person actually donates a liver for liver transplant, so even if they remove some, say 50% of the liver or 60% of the liver of a person, then it is not a problem for the person who is donating, because the liver will actually again grow back. So only when the liver is completely removed from the person, then the person dies. So similarly, in the case of a false ego, we may actually we may remove the false ego to some extent, but even if we leave little bit of false ego, then that will actually again grow back, and again actually it will become big. So that is the case with Indra. He was like completely humbled, but because of the maintenance of the material disease, again it actually grew, and then again he fought with Krishna. So, but so that's why one has to be careful of that. So if we compare Indra, this if Indra's situation with another section in the 10th canto, where also there also some kings were delivered by Krishna, so they offer some beautiful prayers, just like worth noting actually. So in the 10th canto, when Krishna goes to kill Jarasandha, because Jarasandha was defeated by Krishna 17 times, and later, in order for Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform the Rajasya sacrifice, for that Yudhishthira Maharaj has to be accepted as the emperor by all the kings of the universe. So Jarasandha was the only person who did not accept Yudhishthira Maharaj as the emperor. So Krishna goes along with Bhima and Arjuna to kill Jarasandha. So that time, of course, Bhima actually fights with Jarasandha, and Bhima kills Jarasandha. And after Jarasandha was killed, there were many kings who were held by Jarasandha as captive in the prison cell. So then Krishna actually liberates all those kings. When Krishna liberates all those kings, so those kings offer some very beautiful prayers. So I would just like to go through a few of the verses. So those kings, so they say, first they say that, first thing they mention is that, actually we do not blame Jarasandha who has actually put us in captive. We do not blame Jarasandha. It is actually because of our own karma that we were held captive in the prison cell. The first thing they mentioned is we do not blame Jarasandha. And then they say that they mentioned the reason that why they came into the situation is that they became proud of their opulence as the king. So when we were kings, we were proud of our opulences, and you showed mercy to us by depriving us of our kingdom, and because of that we were held captive in the Jarasandha's kingdom. We're held as captive by Jarasandha. Jarasandha is not the reason. So they say like, the reason why we were put in the prison house is because of our own pride. Because of that, we were in that situation. So then they say, previously blinded by the intoxication of riches, we wanted to conquer this earth. And then we fought with each other. We fought with one another to achieve victory, and mercilessly harassed our own subjects, and we arrogantly disregarded you, who stood before us as death. But now you have mercifully destroyed our pride, and we beg simply to remember your lotus feet. And then they mention, Atona Rajyam Mrigatrishni Rupitam Dehe Nashashvat Patatani Jambuva Upasitavyam Sprihayamahe Vibho Kriya Falam Pretyacha Karma Rochanam. So they say, so now what is our desire is that never again will we hanker for a mirage-like kingdom. A kingdom that must be slavishly served by this material body, which is simply a source of disease and suffering, and which is declining at every moment. O Almighty Lord, not only we never hanker after this earthly kingdom, because in order to maintain the kingdom, we have to perform so many yajnas. And ultimately this kingdom will be enjoyed with this body, which is anyway going to perish, which is the house of a disease. So we don't want this earthly kingdom, nor do we want the kingdom of heavenly planets, which is simply an empty enticement for the ears. Karna rochanam. So the pleasures of the heavenly planets, they appear very pleasing to the ears. Yami mam pushpitam vacham. Krishna says those words which glorify the heavenly planet, they are like a flowery language. So it is like simply empty enticement for the rivers. We do not want even the heavenly planets. So that time, Krishna tells these kings, so do you want Sayujya Mukti? So I am ready to give liberation, Sayujya Mukti. So take Sayujya Mukti, a liberation from bondage. So at that time, they speak a beautiful verse. They say, tamnas samadisho payam yena te charanabjayo smritir yatana viramet api samsmaratamiha. So the king say, we do not even want Sayujya Mukti. We do not even want liberation from the cycle of birth and death. And then they mention, we do not even want Prema Bhakti, which is the most sought after benediction. So we see in so many prayers in the Bhagavatam, they say that the devotees offer prayers that we do not want pleasure in the earthly planet or heavenly planet, or we do not want sovereignty over the Lord Brahma's Satyaloka, and we do not want liberation, and they say we do not even want residence in the kingdom of God. So we just want your devotional service. So here, these kings, they say, we do not even want Prema Bhakti unto you. One may think like, Prema Bhakti is the highly sought after benediction for all the devotees. Why they do not want Prema Bhakti? And then they mention, not only we do not want Prema Bhakti, we have they say that we do not even desire remembrance of you, which is one limb of bhakti. One may wonder like what kind of prayer they are offering, because Rupa Goswami mentions that the purpose of all the rules and regulations is to actually remember Krishna, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So they say that nor do we even desire remembrance of your lotus feet, which is one limb of bhakti. Then Krishna is saying, what do you want? They say, we only desire the means for such remembrance. We want the method by which we can actually remember your lotus feet. And even when they say that they want the method by which they can remember the Lord's lotus feet, they are not mentioning, Vishnu Chakra Thakur is saying, that they are not saying that, please give us the method by which we can remember your lotus feet. They are saying, tamna samadisha upayam. Samadisha means, please teach us the method by which we can actually remember your lotus feet. So we can see, Vishnu Chakravarti concludes the purport by saying that this shows clearly the highest degree of qualities like humility, sense control, and freedom from material desire, which are the necessary qualifications for bhakti. So these kings, they did not even desire prema bhakti because of the rise of humility. Because of the rise of humility, they did not desire prema bhakti. And they are actually If we see that this attitude of the kings, that they are actually eager to perform the sadhana by which they can remember the Supreme Lord. So usually the attitude of Sahajiya is that they want a salary without work. So they want the fruit of sadhana, but they do not want to perform sadhana. But here these kings, they are saying that, they are not just saying that, please give us the method, please teach us the method by which we can actually remember your lotus feet. That means that they are eager to perform sadhana bhakti. So it is because actually this already shows they already attained prema bhakti. So because of understanding what actually prema bhakti is that, and they felt themselves so unqualified, and they are feeling, we cannot even desire prema bhakti. Just teach us the method by which we can actually remember your lotus feet, as long as we are in the cycle of birth and death in this material world. So here we see that from these qualities of the kings, how they are actually offering a, how they are having a thorough repentance of the heart. I mentioned the body. In the case of false ego, one has to thoroughly remove the false ego. So here these kings, they so thoroughly removed the false ego from their heart that they felt, they became so humble that they felt that they cannot even ask prema bhakti, or they cannot even ask remembrance of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. So in this way, we see that this another thing, how one has to thoroughly remove the anarthas. And another thing is that, like even in the third canto, when the child in the womb, when the child offers praise to the Supreme Lord, the child says, the purpose of the child offering praise is initially is that the child wants to come out of the miserable situation from the womb. And then ultimately the child says, actually, although I am in living in a terrible condition, I do not want to depart from my mother's womb. Because if I come out of the womb, I will again fall down, I will become captivated by Maya. So I'll just continue to suffer in the womb, because it is an opportunity for me to remember you. So basically, the point is, if we see from this episode, that one may actually fall down and one may realize the mistake, and in order to again not fall down, one thing is that one should not put oneself in those external situations which will actually again tempt the person to give in to those anarthas. And sometimes those external situations may be unavoidable. We may have to again, like Indra, in the case of Indra, he had to again go back to the heavenly kingdom. But even if one has to go to those external situations, one has to actually thoroughly, one has to work hard to perform the sadhana. Just like the example from these kings, they are saying that we want to perform the method, please teach us the method, so that we want to perform the sadhana, so that we can actually remember your lotus feet. And ultimately, at the end, I just want to mention, if we see, analyze, Lord Krishna is dealing with Brahma and Indra. In the 10th canto, if we see Brahma and Indra, Brahma simply, he was just little curious about, how can this particular cowherd boy be the Supreme Personality of God? He just wanted to test Krishna's powers. He just wanted to test Krishna. He did not have a desire to kill the Vrajavasis, or he did not have any hatred towards the Vrajavasis. He was just curious about Krishna. How can this cowherd boy be the king, the Supreme Personality of God? But in the case of Indra, he had a motive. He wanted to actually kill the Vrajavasis. All the residents of Vrindavan. And then, of course, Krishna humbled both of them. And then when both of them realized, Lord Brahma offered a series of 40 prayers. And Indra offered, I think, maybe 7 or 8 prayers. I don't remember exactly. Less than 10. So, Lord Brahma offered a series of 40 prayers, but when Lord Brahma offered 40 prayers, Krishna did not even look at Lord Brahma. In fact, Lord Brahma prayed, I just want to be some creeper outside Vrindavan. But Krishna did not even look in the direction of Lord Brahma. So Brahma thought Brahma was hoping that at least Krishna will speak something after offering so many prayers. Krishna, what you speak of speaking something, Krishna did not even look at the direction of Brahma. And in the case of Indra, in fact, the Acharyas explained that Krishna had a heart-to-heart tank with Indra. So Indra had a much higher cruel motivation and he just offered a few prayers. And Indra, Krishna had a heart-to-heart talk, but in fact, Vishnu Chakravarti, he glorifies Lord Brahma's prayers. He says that may these prayers of Lord Brahma, may they become the foundation of my consciousness. Such a great acharya like Vishnu Chakravarti, he is giving such a glorification of Lord Brahma's prayers. But Krishna did not even acknowledge the presence of Lord Brahma. So, one may wonder, why did actually Krishna actually act like that with respect to Lord Brahma? But whereas Krishna not only had a heart-to-heart talk with Indra, Krishna allowed Indra to perform Abhishek of him, and Krishna allowed Indra to give him the name Govinda. So it seems like this reciprocation is completely out of proportion. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, in the case of Lord Brahma, so that time Krishna was actually searching for the cows and cowherd boys. So Krishna, when Brahma came and started offering prayers, so Krishna felt, oh, he is disturbing in my role. I am playing the role of a cowherd boy. So he is disturbing in my role. So Krishna actually deliberately pretended that he is not the supreme personality. He deliberately avoided, did not acknowledge Lord Brahma. So because he did not want to disturb his role as a cowherd boy. But Vishnu Chakravarti says, but in the case of Krishna's reciprocation with the residents of Vrindavan, there, so in the case of Lord Brahma, Krishna acted like a cowherd boy and he did not acknowledge Lord Brahma. But in the case of the Vrajavasis, Krishna, because of the being attracted by their love of the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna actually forgot that he is the Supreme Personality of God. In the case of Lord Brahma, he was aware that he is the Supreme Personality of God, but deliberately acted as if Brahma did not exist. But in the case of Vrajavasis, he was not even aware, he forgot his powers only. So in this way, so I'll conclude this by summarizing. We talked about the lesson on leadership, and we talked about how in this 10th canto, the Krishna superiority is established over the demigods, and Krishna superiority over the demigods is established. And we also talked about the consistent behavior of a pure devotee and inconsistent behavior of a Karma Mishra Bhakta. And we talked about Krishna's dealings with Brahmaji and Indra. So I'll stop here. Grantaran Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Srila Prabhupada ki chai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki chai.